Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
The 2 seed, the Golden State Warriors, taking on the 5 seed, the Houston Rockets, again tonight in Game 2 action. With the 2 seed, the Warriors up 1 game to none.
You're going to confuse people. They're not the 2 seed.
They're my 2 seed.
Right, but when you say that, people who aren't in the know or people who weren't here in the last couple of segments, they're not going to understand.
Well, I can explain it. It's not hard to explain. We put together all the records of the Western Conference basketball teams the moment that Jimmy Butler started playing for the Warriors, because I think that's a more accurate portrayal of what we're looking at. Same thing with Luka Doncic, for that matter. Like, I don't know why we're entering into the conversation things that happened before Christmas. Completely irrelevant in my mind.
But they matter in terms of how you wind up and where you end up in the standings.
Right, they do. But they're not relevant, in my opinion, with regard to what we're seeing right now. I think that's an accurate portrayal of who these teams are right now. And if you look at those records, the 1 seed is Oklahoma City. The 2 seed is the Warriors. The 3 seed is the Clippers. And the 4 seed is the Timberwolves. Those are your favorites in round one. Those are your favorites.
Yeah, I think the Lakers are favored over the Timberwolves.
I just named the 4 teams that have home court advantage for the rest of the first round.
Minnesota.
In this moment.
And the Warriors. Yep.
And the Thunder and the Clippers.
Well, the Thunder for sure. And the Clippers with the split. Yeah. Home court can be fleeting.
Yes, it can be. I mean, none of them have played game 3 yet.
Right.
So it can go away.
Which,
here
of course,
in a few days.
Is the pivotal game 3. And even more pivotal game 5, as you know.
Actually, thank you for bringing up my point from yesterday. The even numbered games are the pivotal ones. Does tonight not feel pivotal? All of you think that if the Warriors win tonight, it's over. But if they don't, it's not.
The
numbers
would tell you
pivotal.
That of all the times a team has had a 2-0 lead in a best of 7, they win 92.6% of those series. So, but of the 34 teams who've been down 0-2 and gone on to still win that series, 4 of them were teams that dropped the first 2 at home. Those teams are 4-24. If the Rockets lose game 2, they're kind of up against it. 4 teams have been able to do that. Lose the first 2 at home and still win the series. But of those teams who have done so, none of them are teams that are, you know, comprised of 22- and 23-year-olds.
I'm also going to mess with you a little further. Has it ever happened where a 2 seed lost, or I'm sorry, won games 1 and 2
on the road? You're getting confused by your own bit.
What about a 2 seed doing it? That ever happened?
Probably not. Right. And again, this is the first time we've ever come up with our own seeds. And so you could look at these other teams that were, you know, underdogs and whatnot. And I looked at the last time this happened, and it was just 4 years ago, and it was in a 4-5 matchup. So a 4-5 is usually teams
evenly matched. Sure.
So the 4 seed lost the first 2 at home, and they went on to win the series. Anyway, it was the Clippers, and the first game that was won by a home team was Game 7. So
wow.
The team that, I mean, the road team won the first six.
That's
and then the
wild.
Home team was like, whoa.
Yeah.
We should probably win a home
we
game.
We should probably actually do something for our fans.
Yeah, and they did.
Yeah, they did. Kalena's going to join us in a moment. Out to the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. And this is a beautiful example of how two different people can look at the same thing in a completely different way. 925, you can explain it, but it's still meaningless and made up, LOL. Butler trade was a game changer, but the rest of the season still happened. Right. It happened. But I would describe the rest of the season as meaningless. Right now, I mean, there was a moment this year where all of us were like, but D'Anthony Melton, and that, I'm supposed to care about that now? It's got nothing to do with anything.
Well, without D'Anthony Melton, you don't start 12-3, and you're probably in the play-in.
Maybe. You were in the play-in anyway.
Well, I mean, yeah. That's right. That happened.
Right? How quickly we forget. River Island's guest line. Let's do it. Out to the River Island's guest line to talk with Kalena Azubuike, getting ready for game two in Houston. Obviously part of the broadcast, NBC Sports Bay Area alongside Fitz. Hey, Kalena, what's going on, man?
I'm chilling, man. Hanging out in the hotel over here. What's going on with you guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for doing it. We really appreciate it. So I say the Warriors are the two seed in the Western Conference playoffs. They're actually the two seed because I'm only taking into account Western Conference records that happened after Jimmy Butler started playing for the Warriors. Is that fair?
That's about right. The 23-8, the 31 games, ranked first defensively. It sounds like a two seed to me. And I think their confidence level is probably that of a higher seed too, right? The way they've been playing, obviously it was just fight, claw, do everything you can to have a chance at a playoff berth. And they did that, winning that first play-in tournament game, getting the seventh seed, which was huge because you don't want to have to go up against OKC, like the best team in the league the first round. So, yeah, if you lose that first one, then you win the second one, you're still in. But you're in a much more advantageous position right now going up against this somewhat inexperienced. They got some experienced players, but some of their best players that they rely on for scoring the most, Alperen Şengün, Jalen Green, who they guard really well, are inexperienced, and the Warriors have the experience on their side. And you saw that in the way the Warriors were able to close them out, even though the Rockets made their run game there in that third quarter and fought hard with all their offensive rebounds and just battling and holding and hugging Steph and Stephen Adams throwing people all over the place to get offensive rebounds. They overcame that and got a W game one.
So, Kalena, you look at game two coming up here on 95.7 The Game, and you think about a blueprint for Houston to win this game. What is it that the Rockets would have to do? Or on the other side, what would the Warriors have to mess up to allow Houston to be able to get this game here tonight in game two?
Well, it's easier said than done for the Rockets. They got to make more of their open threes. You would like to say maybe to get even more physical, but probably not going to be that. Just kind of convert on more of their second chance opportunities. The Warriors actually did a pretty good job of scrambling around and getting a few stops, even when they got the second chance points. But I felt like in that second half, Ime Udoka went more with Şengün handling and some ball screens. Maybe they try to set some ball screens for Jalen Green to get him going, because the Houston Rockets can't have success if their leading scorer continues to struggle like this, like he has against the Warriors all season, like he did in game one, only 7 points, 3 for 15. He really needs to go right. And the Warriors have forced him left a whole bunch and kind of sat on his right side. So can they get some action for Jalen Green to go right? Can they switch up an angle of a ball screen, even if the Warriors are sitting on his right hand, to get him going right or get him moving to his right, get him comfortable, see if they can get him out in space? The fast break points were 16-4 in favor of the Warriors. And that's the one thing, like Warriors, if they can snatch the offensive or the defensive rebounds, get two hands on it and corral some more of those, it could almost work as a live ball turnover. Warriors can kind of get out and run because everybody, pretty much everybody, is crashing for the Rockets, and a lot of times there won't be anyone back, so the Warriors can do that even more. But they need their fast break points, the Rockets do. They need their second chance points. So can they get out in space a little more? Can they push it a little more, even after a made bucket, throw the ball ahead even more and throw it ahead to Jalen Green and Tyrese, or whoever it is that can attack from the wings of Ben Thompson, and see if they can get more in transit? Because the Warriors show, like, everybody wants to talk about the Rockets' defense. Warriors' defense is legit, man. I mean, 85 points is wild. So the Rockets need more in space, less in the half court. They want to speed it up a tiny bit more, maybe, and get out and run a little more. If they have to go half court to half court, that favors the Warriors, especially since they have ISO game now, and they can figure things out if everything gets stagnant in the half court.
Fitz and Bukey on NBC Sports Bay Area tonight, game two of the Warriors and Rockets. You'll hear it on 95.7 The Game. Kalena joining us right now on Willard and Dibbs. So, Kalena, when you look at game one, did you kind of take away from it, the Warriors just won a basketball game, or did you actually see a sign of some matchups there that suggest the Warriors have a true edge?
You know, I don't even feel like the Warriors played that well. I feel like they can play much better, and I feel like that's how the Warriors are thinking right now. Like, they probably feel like there's another level they can get to. Like, they outscored the Rockets from behind the three-point line by 18, but they didn't shoot it amazing. And as far as matchups go, like, I think you like Steph Curry versus anybody. They're obviously going to double-team him a ton, and he figured it out and kind of split the defense and got inside to kind of start off for him. Jimmy Butler against – you know what matchup is that's interesting that I think the Warriors will do a better job with is the Moses Moody, Alperen Sengun matchup, because I think they want to get Alperen Sengun involved with pretty much everything or as much as possible that they do offensively, ball screens, split action, all that stuff. I guess Moses Moody can't attack him one-on-one and just go ISO and get in there and make a threatening drive, get deep in the paint, counter move, and whatever it takes, then just go hit and set a handoff screen. Throw it to someone and set a screen and get Sengun involved that way and just keep him involved. Use that matchup to their advantage. You get Moses Moody involved in some ball screen action. And then, yeah, if he's a little more decisive with his first move against Sengun, like – you know, hit him with a mean crossover, see if you can really get into the paint and make someone else help, and just make them pay whenever Sengun is on the floor. I think they can do a better job of that, just putting him in some tough situations, some actions that he'll have a tough time guarding, and make him make a decision. Does he want to be in drop covers? Does he want to get up? And whatever he does, make him pay for that. I think Moses Moody will do a better job of that balance, figuring out when to attack himself or go pass it and set a screen to keep him involved. And I think the Warriors will do a better job of just making him pay.
And they need to make him pay. And it looked like, you know, the Warriors' younger guys, the role players, were kind of slow to warm into the ball game. Pods is a little bit of a different animal in that way. But outside of Jimmy and Steph, you look for that third score tonight. Who do you think is key for the Warriors to get comfortable and get that additional offense?
I think it is Pods. I mean, Pods, since Jimmy's been here, has been the third leading scorer, and he did get, like you said, he's different. He got the scoring start off of the Warriors. He hit that first three, which was big. The first points of the Warriors, a guy that's in his first playoff appearance and showing immediately that the moment isn't too big, lights aren't too bright. I think Moses Moody, like I mentioned before, he'll probably have a bigger game. I think he's capable of having one or two big scoring games, whether that's 16, 18, whatever, however many points that could be. And you think of a Quentin Post who didn't score in game one. I think he could have an impact and really stretching the floor for the Warriors and spacing and getting the bigs away from the basket, whoever's on him, whether it's Steven Adams or Sengun, see if he can get him out of the paint and open up more driving opportunities for Stephen Curry, for Jimmy Butler. So that's what I mean when I say the Warriors can play better. The Warriors didn't even win the bench battle. Like, they lost that pretty handily, and that should go the Warriors' way. It was 23-14 in favor of the Rockets. So you expect a little more from your bench. You know Buddy Hield is capable of having a monster game or just an X-factor type of game. He didn't really have that in game one. So Warriors weren't really hitting on all cylinders, and they still got a win, which can – can be, you know, another thing that the Warriors can get confidence from, knowing that, okay, we kind of won with our E effort, maybe B, you know, defensively, it was an A++. Offensively, maybe not so much, and they still got a win, which is great. So there's levels higher they can get to, and I think the role players being a part of that is really important.
Kalana, when you look at the Rockets roster, there's no one on the team that was there when the Rockets had their previous playoff battles with Steph Curry's Warriors. But I wonder if being in that building, did you sense just from whether it's fans, media, the whole picture, did you sense that there is some sort of a mental block or confidence problem because it's Steph Curry and the Warriors in town again?
I didn't sense that from the players, but the crowd, though, you could definitely feel the, oh, geez, we've seen this before. We know how this story goes with Steph Curry going on his flurries and torching him and hitting shots from all over the place and the groans. And then the spatter of Warriors fans, like, screaming and doing their thing. It felt really familiar just being in there. I'm sure Steph Curry is really comfortable in that building. I'm sure Draymond Green is really comfortable and familiar with that building. And that helps. Other than that, not too much. But it is kind of funny hearing the crowd react, knowing that I've heard that exact sound from this place, the groans. And they've had to watch the Warriors have success at their team's expense a whole bunch. And that's kind of fun for sure. Definitely, you can definitely hear it on the broadcast as well when they grow and everything. And then the Warrior crowd that's in there gets hyped up. So I enjoy that part of it. I remember, you know, the Warrior days with Kevin Durant and when James Harden was there and Chris Paul and everything. You know, there's a lot of success, a lot of Warrior great wins that they've had in that building. So that's pretty cool.
How much of an advantage is it for the Warriors having been through it? And, you know, you had 48 hours now or more between games. And so a veteran team coming off a victory has a chance to just rest. I know Steph went out and golfed, and you probably snuck in 9 yourself, Kalana. I know you're an avid golfer and probably better than I remember when you and I got out to Presidio. But how much does the time off help a veteran team as opposed to a younger team that's champing at the bit to get back out there?
Well, I just want to know why you said only 9 for me. Do you just feel like my attention span isn't good enough for 18?
That's a good question.
Is that what you're saying?
Well,
right there? You're kind of right.
Yeah.
You're kind of right, and I'm upset that you're right about it, but
yeah.
I just want to know why you said that.
Well, unless your pace of play has changed, 9 holes for you is a solid 4 hours.
Wow.
Pew, pew.
Whoa. Wait a minute. That pace of play was never my issue, was it? I definitely play faster now. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you were known for you had a waggle. You had a waggle, and, you know, you were still working through your swing.
Ahead.
So you were definitely, like, going to make sure that you were set up and hitting the right shot. And even then, when you were in your nascent rookie days, you still were better than I will ever be, Kalana.
Yeah, well, I definitely play faster now. I mean, if I'm going to stink out there, I'm going to stink pretty fast. And then, we got 18 holes, and had a good time. But yeah, I don't know if it may favor the Warriors early in the series, and then if the series goes later or goes like 6 games or 7, maybe you think about the youth of the Rockets. But just in general in the playoffs, I don't know if the rest favors either team, just because it's both teams have to go through it, and you do get your rest for the most part, even though later in the series it goes every other day. But I do feel like the experience factor for the Warriors comes into play the most when it comes down to, like, clutch games or close games. You saw how the Warriors closed in Game 1. Which group of closers would you rather have? Steph Curry, Jimmy Butler, or would you rather have Alperen Sengun, Van Vliet, who went, 2-for-13 from three-point range in the first game, I believe it was, and Jalen Green trying to close games for you? I think the answer is clear, and anyone in their right minds would choose the Warriors when it comes to the closing down the stretch and making plays, the smarts, the IQ, thinking the game, the adjustment stuff. So that's the biggest thing for me. I don't feel like the days off really have a huge impact, unless maybe it goes later in the round. And then you get later in the playoffs and you still have a young team going against an older team, then maybe we could start talking about the days off. But the experience factor is close games for me.
Kalena Azubuki with us. Hey, Kalena, did you happen to talk to Fitz either late yesterday or early today?
Yeah. Okay. I talked to him both late yesterday and early today. Yeah.
All right. Was there any discussion of bug tussle? Did that come up at all?
Of what?
Bug tussle. All right. So
bug tussle?
Bug tussle. So here's the deal. I want you to be ready for something tonight because it's been promised to us. Fitz came on yesterday, and he was asking for a city in Texas where he could sort of reference it if Steph Curry took a really long three. You know, like, oh, he shot that one from Austin or something like that. So quick Google, quick Google search on odd Texas city names came up with a place called Bug Tussle, and that ended up being the big winner according to Bob. And so Bob has promised that Steph is going to shoot one from Bug Tussle tonight, and I want you to be ready.
I will be ready. I appreciate you telling me that. I know last game he went with Woodlands, and yes, we played golf in that area the day before yesterday. So Bug Tussle. How do you spell that?
It's two words. Yeah, it's B-U-G, like a bug, and then the other word is Tussle, T-U-S-S-L-E, Bug Tussle.
T-U-S-S-L-E. I'll be waiting for that, and if he doesn't do it, I'll get on him.
Oh, he'll do it. He'll do it. I trust that man.
I know he will.
It's going to happen. All right. Hit him straight, Kalena. Have a great call tonight. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys having me, man. Take care.
Thanks, yes, Bookie.
Thank you. Fitz and Bookie tonight. Yeah. There's Bookie.
Yeah. Fresh off the course. I mean, whatever. It's great.
I used to have a problem with the pace of play, too.
And it was never a problem with Kalena, and I was fortunate enough to play probably five or six rounds with Kalena, like right when he was learning the game. And you could tell that he was
an athlete,
tremendous athlete. He's a specimen. But when you're an athlete, you're used to doing things really well. And so when you are playing golf, and you know this as you're a pretty good golfer, but even when you're playing, it's like you got your setup, the grip, stance, aim, club, point. And when you're a really good professional athlete, you're used to like being great, and so when you're not yet great, you're going through your process and the whole thing, and you're playing with a couple of slappies, myself and Baltimore Joe out at Presidio, and it's like I'm one warm-up swing maybe, and whatever, I stink, I'm gonna hit it and I'm gonna go find it, and we're gonna get something to drink at the fourth hole, and we're gonna be on to Cincinnati. But when you're a pro athlete, you're used to the process, right? Yep. And so Kalena's trusting the process, and I'm watching Buki, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm playing with Kalena Azubuki. Yeah. And by the time you get to like the 11th hole, it's like, let's go while we're young. And you know, but
yeah,
super fun guy to play with.
I know that, you know, the way you describe that, it's like, I don't think you can really do anything well in sports until you get to that point where you don't have to think about, okay, then this, now this, how's my waggle, where my arms, where my legs,
sure,
where's my, it's kind of like Giannis shooting a free throw. You know how everybody's got this like timer on him now and everybody's counting in the middle of it? It's like watch Steph shoot a free throw and watch Giannis shoot a free throw. I'm not saying Giannis can, nobody can shoot him like Steph, but like, dude, it's just get the ball, step up and shoot it. Yet, like, it all has to be muscle memory or else it doesn't work. Yep. Giannis looks like, I get uncomfortable watching him shoot free throws. Just watching him is uncomfortable. Just sitting there staring at the wall.
Yeah.
For 11 seconds. It's also illegal, but whatever. Not going to call it.
Well, it's tough, especially because if you look at early in his career, he was actually a pretty good, not great, he was a pretty good free throw shooter, like 70 to 75.
Yeah, I don't know what he's at now. He's not terrible, but it's just painful to watch.
Yeah.
Even when they go in.
You don't normally go that direction, though. Like, normally you start out in the 60s and you trend up, you get better, and then you get to your peak, but he's gone the other direction, which is, it's all mental.
Craig Ackerman was having a mental moment watching game one. He's the one on Rockets TV who said he's got PTSD from watching Steph Curry. TV voice of the Rockets is going to join us next on Warrior Wednesday, which is brought to you by Friedman's Appliance. Come see their full selection of in-stock luxury appliances and live working vignettes. Visit Friedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today. And we're sponsored by the San Francisco International Airport. This is Willard and Dibbs.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Curry, well defended by Green. Wow.
Oh my gosh.
That is vintage Steph Curry. Incredible. Just an incredible shot maker. Now to Curry, got to pick him up. Shakes loose. Oh my goodness. Beats the shot clock. Steph Curry with 28, his fourth three.
This is unreal, Craig.
I'm just telling you, man. I got PTSD from seeing this dude too many times in the playoffs. I just gotta admit it. Comes into Curry on the bounce, launches deep one. Oh my goodness. And he hits it from the Y at Toyota Center.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
That would be post-traumatic Steph disorder.
That's a four.
That Craig Ackerman, the TV voice of the Rockets, was expressing the other night, and he's going to join us here on the River Islands guest line right now. Before he does, though, two quick pieces of NBA injury news to pass along, and one of them is not good for Warriors fans. First one has to do with the game that's about to tip here shortly. Jason Tatum is officially out, so there will not be any Jason Tatum in Game 2 for the Boston Celtics with their 1-0 lead on the Orlando Magic. But for the Warriors, a late downgrade to questionable, Brandon Pajemski with an illness. So have no idea any further information than that, but the late downgrade for Brandon Pajemski, look, I think most people would argue Warriors' most important role player right there, and a lot of minutes to fill in if he can't play. So that's a big deal. Let's get Craig Ackerman into the conversation. Good afternoon, Craig, especially on a game day. Thank you for coming on.
Good afternoon, and no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, hey, just real quick, since that happened, the downgrade of Brandon Pajemski to questionable, if he were to miss this game, how do you see that affecting things?
I mean, I think that affects a lot. He played well the other night. He's someone else who is a perimeter threat that the Rockets need to deal with, depending upon how they ultimately decide to defend Steph Curry tonight. Maybe they'll send some more double teams and blitz him and get the ball out of his hands. I guess it's one less perimeter threat that they would have to worry about in that situation. But obviously, for any team and at this time of the year, you want to be at full strength and to not have one of those guys that have been part of a starting lineup that's been really, really, really good for Golden State to not have him obviously does not help the Warriors.
So how do the Rockets go about defending Steph Curry? Because two games back, the Rockets held him on 1 of 10 for 3 points, and then game one in the series, it felt like they defended him pretty well, but Steph was able to get 31. Is it a case of different approach in game two, or do they just stick Amen Thompson on him again and hope that Steph doesn't throw in three miracle threes again?
Well, I mean, look, he's done that his entire career, and it does seem like he's hit like three of those per game against the Rockets for the last decade. But yeah, so Amen Thompson will be the primary guy on him, but they might end up sending more doubles at him. I think you saw a little bit of that towards the end of the game. Maybe you'll see them, and they've done it this year, where they'll blitz the other team's best scorer and try to get the ball out of their hands, and then just kind of dare other guys on their roster to beat you. Whether or not that happens here tonight, we'll see, but I think that's possibly a strategy. But sometimes even when – look, I think the 3 points that Curry had a couple of weeks ago was an aberration. That was the kind of game that you never see from him, and he's obviously much better than that. And so I think even when you do defend him as well – as you possibly can, he still finds ways to beat you. And if he does, again, you just got to tip your cap and move on. But maybe we'll see some more double teams and try to get the ball out of his hands and dare some of these other guys to beat them.
Craig Ackerman, TV voice of the Rockets, with us here on Willard and Dibs. I'd love to dive a little further into your PTSD, Craig. And I wonder how it affects the entire series. I get that the Rockets players didn't experience this, but I also know what things are like when it kind of hangs over an organization and the fan base. Like, how is the history of this matchup still in the building tonight?
Well, I mean, look, for me personally, it hadn't been fun. I mean, I've been here forever. This is my 31st season, not doing this, but my 31st season with the organization. So I was there for every single one of the previous four playoff matchups, primarily doing radio back then. And so I've been there, done that, and would prefer to not do it again from a personal standpoint. The players on this team, most of these guys obviously were never – none of these guys were around for any of that, although the young guys on this team, up until they beat them in that NBA Cup quarterfinal game in Houston, none of the young guys had ever beaten them earlier. But it is something that does kind of hang over the Warriors, the fan base. The Warriors have been the Rockets' kryptonite for a very long time. And the irony, I guess, the sad irony from my perspective would be, after all those years when the Rockets tried to compete with them, and that group that they tried to compete with handful of years ago, I thought was the most talented team ever assembled. Obviously, they had their chances, the Chris Paul hamstring injury, then the 27 missed threes in game seven, and so on and so forth. They didn't get it done. This is a different group, but the irony to go from that and then to finally be back in the playoffs after 5 years, and then you match up with the Warriors again, and Curry is still doing his thing. It can be a little bit deflating, but look, I respect Steph Curry. I respect his pantheon on the all-time great level of players. He's just an incredible talent. And again, sometimes you can do your best to try to slow him and stop him, and he just still finds a way to get it done.
Yeah, 59 career 30-plus point games in the playoffs, 8 against Houston, which is the most against any single opponent. So your PTSD is well-earned. Craig Ackerman here on 95.7 The Game. So beyond the stopping Steph conundrum, which Houston faces, how do you go about having more offense for a team that really struggled in game one to shoot it?
Yeah, well, look, this team, look, the last 6 weeks of the regular season, they actually did shoot the ball as well as they had the entire year. So there's that. But generally speaking, yes, this is a Rockets team that if you can get them in a half court, the reliability of their perimeter shooting, you can't rely on that from a game-to-game basis. There have been times that they have shot the ball very well, and again, they did shoot the ball a lot better towards the end of the season. But they win games because they're the hustle stats team. As you guys saw in game one, and the Warriors are a terrific rebounding and offensive rebounding team themselves. The Rockets have been the best rebounding and offensive rebounding team in the league the entire year, and in fact, they've been the best offensive rebounding team that the league has seen in years, and a lot of times some of their best offenses put shots at the rim and going getting the misses. But they have to win the offensive rebound battle. They have to win the second chance points battle. But their turnovers in the first half, there were just too many of them, and it cascaded into that big run by the Warriors in the second quarter. And that's when things really got out of control. But they got to win points off of turnovers. They were very limited in terms of their fast break points. Golden State's a terrific transition defense, as are the Rockets, but the Rockets did not get much transition offense at all in game one. They've got to play with more tempo. They've got to get in their sets quicker. And then hopefully they're not going to be, you know, what were they, 6 of 29, 6 of 39 bad from the three-point line moving forward.
Craig, what you're talking about is exactly what Amen Thompson was talking about after shoot-around today, and I'm sure the Warriors are well aware of it. Like, the Rockets need to do more in transition. You just said the Warriors are a great transition defensive team. So is that easier said than done? Rockets want to push the pace, but can you just do that if you want to?
Well, they got to force turnovers, which Golden State at times, those live ball turnovers, is a bit and has been a little bit of the Achilles heel during this great run that they've had over the last decade. And now the Rockets did score their fair share of points off of turnovers in game one, and I think they will probably do so again, but they have to limit their turnovers, which again is easier said than done because Golden State's been playing the best defense in the league since acquiring Jimmy Butler, and they're forcing more turnovers than everybody, but they've got to limit their live ball turnovers because they can't allow Golden State to get easy baskets. And then they just went, they got to be more decisive. They've got to get into their actions quicker. And when they attack, and it's very difficult to get to the rim against Golden State, when they have to attack, they have to understand that if they're not going to get all the way to the rim and the Warriors' defense collapse on them, there are opportunities to drive and kick, and they need to make more of those opportunities, create more of those opportunities quicker and more often, and then just hope again that some of those shots start to drop, because they just did not make enough shots in game one.
Are there any personnel changes that would assist in that drive and kick? Because I look at what this team has been throughout the regular season, and some of the better shooters on the roster are guys who have not been playing of late.
Well, I mean, Dylan Brooks has had a heck of a year. He's almost at 40% from the three-point line. Dylan's actually been amazing in the 2 years that he's been. So he's certainly capable. Now, Fred VanVleet and Jalen Green have struggled against the Warriors all year. Jalen Green has struggled historically his entire career against the Warriors. And those are the two primary guys that ultimately I think need to be better. They're going to maybe play a little bit more of that double big lineup than we saw in game one. That double big lineup was with Steven Adams and Alperen Şengün was the best two-man combination in the league. Their net rating was just insane, and they were all year long, they've been running teams off the floor. When those two guys play with one another, maybe see some more minutes for Steven Adams, maybe see some more Aaron Holiday off the bench. He shot the ball really well from three this year. If Jalen and or Fred can't seem to get it going, but I think they're basically going to stick with the eight that you saw in game one, maybe a little bit more Adams. And then again, maybe some Aaron Holiday moving forward in this series if Jalen and Fred can't bust out of their slumps.
Rockets TV voice Craig Ackerman joining us on Willard and Dibs. Craig, I ask this with the utmost respect because I really like what the Rockets are doing, but are they just too young to really realistically advance in the playoffs?
I think history would tell you yes. You have to go through pain ultimately to experience pleasure when it comes to playoff basketball. And the vast majority of young teams ultimately have to go through some of that pain, learn from those experiences, and move forward. Game one was the first playoff game for so many of these guys. And the young players were the reason why the Rockets finished as the two seed. The veterans have been really, really important to setting the tone and showing these guys what it means to be professional, what it takes to win at the highest level. But the Rockets achieved what they did in the regular season because of the growth of all of the young players. And game one was the first time these guys have experienced it. Obviously, Şengün was incredible. Hopefully, that will be the case moving forward. And so they're going to have to learn from this. But normally, yes, young guys, it takes a little bit of time. But the mentality in that locker room today, yesterday, before game one, all year long, this is a really mentally tough group. That tone was set by the arrival of this new coaching staff and the addition of the veteran players. They have had low moments this season, and they've been able to fight their way through it. They believe that, yes, they are capable of ultimately advancing. They do have the tools to win this series because they are a very, very good, versatile defensive team. It just comes down to, again, just being a little bit smarter with their playmaking, turning down the turnovers, and just making more shots moving forward.
What exactly has Ime Udoka brought other than just the confidence and the success that he had in Boston and what he's been able to do here in the turnaround in Houston? What's the one thing that you look at that's been a big difference maker for this young team?
Well, you know, I guess a big storyline with the NBA is that the league has gone a bit soft. And personally, I don't necessarily disagree with that. So if you're really wanting an old school feel to the NBA, where physicality and in your face sort of bravado was something that you miss and would like more of, that's what Ime's brought to this team. And they've taken on his personality. This is as physical of a team as there is in the league. If I don't know how much you've paid attention to the way the Rockets have played since the midway point of last season, but this is a group that doesn't back down from anyone. They've probably gotten in more scuffles and fights than any team in the league. That's a reflection of how they ultimately want to play. They want to play at that line. Obviously, don't want to cross it over, but they play with a bit of an old school mentality, and that is what Ime has directly brought to this group, that you've got to be tougher. You've got to take the fight to the opposition, because he felt like this group, correctly so, had been getting bullied up until his arrival, and they really started to sort of take that form about midway through last season, and it obviously carried over all year long this year as well.
Craig, great stuff. Great having you. Before you go, where does Steph Curry rank on the city of Houston's all-time PTSD list?
Let me see. I'm trying to think. Well, the Astros have had such incredible success. The Astros are to the Yankees as the Warriors have been to the Rockets. You know, back in the mid-1990s, the Seattle Supersonics had the Rockets number in a very similar way to the way that Golden State has had this version over the last decade, the Rockets number in the last 10 or so years. Guys like, you know, Gary Payton and Detlef Schrempf and Sean Kemp, the Rockets won one of their titles when the Sonics got upset by Denver in the first round, so they were able to avoid them altogether. But I think, to me, I would probably put Steph as number one, because those original playoff series going back lastly in 2019 were incredibly painful, because the manner at which the Rockets lost those series were all different, all uniquely painful. And so for me personally, I think Curry is, yeah, I definitely put him number one. He's such a great player that, again, sometimes, as we talked about earlier, you can scheme to try to stop him. You can scheme to try to slow him down, but he just finds a way to beat you. And it just seems like he's always found a way to beat the Rockets over the years. And again, hopefully for this young group, they can get over the hump here in this series and move on and put that era behind them. But again, I tip my cap to Steph Curry. He's just an incredible player. And also, look, Draymond Green's been there along for the ride. He's been awesome against the Rockets. Kevon Looney has been a rock for Golden State his entire career. So again, I have a ton of respect for Golden State, but I will admit it would be nice to finally get one over on them for the first time in forever.
It's a big statement, big statement. All right, Craig. Hey, thanks again, and have a great call tonight.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, Craig Ackerman, the TV voice of the Houston Rockets, and he suffers from post-traumatic Steph syndrome.
Which makes sense, and I just was looking at the list of 59 Steph Curry 30-point games in the playoffs, and he's got 7 against Houston, 7 against Cleveland, 7 against Portland, so his PTSD is well-earned, and he just referred to the 2019 playoffs, and I'd forgotten how tight that was. The Warriors win it in 6, and that was the year, of course, that they didn't win the title. Toronto would beat Golden State, but all 6 of those games were settled by 6 points or fewer between the Rockets and the Warriors. Right. And that was a semi.
Yeah.
1 seed against a 4 seed, but it was just that close in 2019. The Warriors were able to gut it out with the super team that would go on to lose to Toronto.
Yeah, and then there's obviously the year that James Harden and all the missed threes there in the Game 7 situation, and Chris Paul injured and out and all that. James Harden's statement last week is something that really rung around in my head after hearing him say it, that he clearly believes he would have a ring if it weren't for Steph Curry. It's a big statement for a player to make.
No doubt.
Who, by the way, is like also in the playoffs on a team that could contend.
Right. And the game you're referring to was in 2018, where the Warriors went to Houston and they had to gut it out. And Houston for the game was 7 of 44 from 3.
Dude, it was 7
of 44.
That fourth quarter was absolute insanity.
Yeah.
It was just the biggest brick fest I've ever seen.
And it started in the third where the Warriors outscored them 33-15. And that just got them back in the game. And I don't, you know, I'm trying to remember now that I'm looking at the box score that Houston was up for a lot of that game. And then the third quarter flipped it, and then Houston had chance after chance after chance in the fourth, and they wound up 1 of 7 from 3 in that fourth quarter.
Never forget that game. I watched it from the press box of the San Francisco Giants. And you want to talk about an entire group of people who's there to cover a game that they weren't even watching.
Right.
It was unbelievable that they put that TV on in the press box, and that is all anybody was focused on. Clank, clank, clank. You know what the Rockets needed that night? They needed just one of these.
Chance to tie it here for Golden State. Curry's got it. And Curry will let it go for three. Comes up short. Offensive rebound. Curry again. And Curry hits a three. Tie game. 2.8. Evans. And oh, too strong. And we have overtime in New Orleans.
All right, that's from TNT. That is the call of the famous three-pointer that Steph shot in New Orleans while up 2-0 and ended up winning game three in overtime. That was 10 years ago tonight.
Oh, wow.
The 10-year anniversary of that shot is tonight. And Steph Curry will be performing in the playoffs yet again.
And maybe he will author another one of those.
Who knows?
For Craig Ackerman's sake, I hope it doesn't come to that because, yeah, you mentioned PTSD, post-traumatic Steph disorder, which is a good way to describe it because Houston's been through it and through it and through it. And, you know, 2018 and 2019, Houston had a real live chance. And those are the dream teams of Kevin Durant and Draymond and Steph and Klay. And yet Houston was good enough to push him to seven and have game seven on their home floor.
Yep.
And if it wasn't for an historically bad night shooting, Houston probably knocks off that team.
I think so, and probably wins in the finals as well. Certainly would have been favored. All right, Monty Poole is going to join us from Houston in a little bit over 5 minutes. Oh, Larry and Hayward, I think, would like to talk to you.
Okay.
Dan.
It's a Dan day?
I don't know. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, Dibs, I actually got paired up with you and Matt Steinmetz over at Sky West one time, so I just want to call in and just confirm your pace of play is right on point. I think it was like on the 14th hole you guys were able to even call in and do a bit. Do you remember that one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I love that 14th hole. That's that little slight dog leg in Sky West Rest in Peace, which I think is a shame that course is no longer with us. But that's the one that goes out toward the mall, right, before you turn and come back from home.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. We called in.
You called in and did a bit. Go ahead, Larry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to confirm, you know, that their pace of play was awesome. Like I said, even had time to call and do a bit. It was great golfing with those guys. And go Warriors. I mean, let's hope that we could do this thing in 4 or 5.
Okay, Larry.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Larry. Who'd you called in and did a bit with who?
Probably the radio station. Just, you know, did a quick little call in like, hey, we're out here at Sky West and, you know, for whatever reason, it was some sort of a game. And, you know, sometimes you just call in. I know that you will occasionally call in on your off time. If, you know, if you're catching strays or whatever, you'll call into the roast.
It's happened.
You know, I'll call into the midday show, whatever. It's something that you do. And so we probably made a live call in to, I don't know what show that would have been. Maybe Haberman and Middlecoff.
It's that long ago,
yeah,
huh?
It was a long time. Well, Sky West has been closed now for
a
long time.
Long time.
Which is,
long time.
I mean, don't get me started on golf courses that are no longer with us. Breaks my heart,
yeah,
Coach.
It's rough.
Sky West is a fun one, too. Old school.
I loved it.
A lot of them eucalyptus trees. Not an easy track now.
Those damn eucalyptus trees. They won't spit it out.
No.
Spit it out.
Spit it.
Why are you doing that?
Yep.
You know, there's always someone next to you. You know, 93% of those trees are air.
I hate
not
that.
Not eucalyptus. Eucalyptus is 99% not air. Anyway. All right. Monty Poole's going to join us from Houston coming up next. And actually, this worked out really well because I want to know what the hell's going on with Pods. And Monty's going to be tapped in as much as anybody. So let's find out. Warriors in Houston for game two tonight. 6:30 start means Warriors Live with us is going to start at 5:30. Presented by Xfinity. Stream sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. And we're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. Monty Poole next, Willard and Dibs.